our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
God, this is a tough question. I don't really know.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I've never given a thought in my entire life. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wrong. Continue.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Evan, since you were a little bit negative at the end of that, why don't you bring up a pitcher on the Rockies who's actually better than someone on the Twins?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome into the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis, and I am joined tonight by Chuck Anderson. How are you doing tonight, Chuck?
I am doing excellent. It is very fun times, I think, right now in baseball, and it's a good time to talk to you blokes. I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, thanks, Chuck. We're also joined by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
I'm doing a lot better now that I'm a bloke, considering last week I was a jamoke, according to Chuck, so I guess I'm moving up in the world.
That's true. We were called jamokes by Mr. Anderson, so.
I think I need a different word every week to describe you guys, and I think that's my new project. Every week I'll have a new moniker for you gentlemen.
That could be good. Chuck, you can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. And Evan, you can be reached at FWFB. That's correct, right, guys?
You're on it like Blue Bonnet.
What Chuck said.
Thanks. I don't know how to react to that, but
me either.
I'm at B Brennis FWFB. Why don't we just jump right in? And Evan, you had some interesting information about XFIPs and home run to fly ball, right? So why don't you just jump right into that for us?
Well, I mean, it wasn't, you know, fantastic information or anything that should really surprise anybody, but it was me just sitting around thinking random baseball stuff. And it was because it was a comment, what was it, last week we were talking about somebody's XFIP and we were saying that it was largely based on a standardized home run to fly ball rate for the league, which I believe FanGraphs, which most of us use, calculates at 10.5%. And you just think about the influx of home runs over, you know, the past year and a half, where it's not really 10.5 anymore. It's a lot closer to this year. It's 13.5% almost. This year it's 12, or last year it was 12.8. So in this environment where we're using more sabermetrics, like, for example, went to Miller Park with Chuck this weekend, and on the scoreboard by the rosters, they were using OPS instead of, like, batting average or on base, which I thought would be a little more accessible to the average fan. You're seeing sabermetrics brought up on broadcast where they're looking at FIP leaderboards, and I'm seeing different stuff like that. So people are trying to figure out how to navigate which statistics are best to gravitate to, and I just think that there needs to be a calculation to account for the home run environment if we're going to use XFIP going forward. And I was curious what you guys thought about that.
What are your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, it definitely was thought-provoking. I did some research for the show, and later on I will bring up a pitcher whose XFIP is 4.34. And right away when I looked at it, I thought, well, he's a guy who's had home run problems in the past, and he's cut down on them this year. So how much better is he actually pitching than he was pitching last year? So I definitely completely agree with Evan. I mean, my suggestion was that I think they should take the average of the last 5 years, because you don't want to have too much recency bias, because we know, you know, juiced balls and this, that, and everything else. But I do think it is something that we should definitely take into consideration when we're looking at XFIP. I have a tendency to believe in FIP more than XFIP, personally. So I just think the more variables you get in, the more randomness you get. So XFIP is not one of my favorites. You guys hear me use FIP a lot more frequently.
Right. Before we get Ben's thoughts, just a comment on the five-year average. So if you look at, like, since 2000, really, four of the highest home run to fly ball rates, four of the top five have been 2012 or later, and they were all over 11.5%. So if you want to go ahead and use that average, then obviously it needs to be bumped up, you know, a tick. Now, my question, and Ben, maybe you have a point on this, is how much is that percentage point or two really going to affect the ratios, you know, if you started breaking it down like that?
I mean, in my opinion, it probably does change it, at least to some degree. It, when you had brought it up initially, it made me really start to think that while it's not a huge difference, it's still enough of one that makes me have to take into account a couple other factors that may not be getting mixed in to some of these sabermetrics. And as a result, maybe all the information and the details that I look at aren't necessarily as on point as I was thinking. So maybe, like, if someone's XFIP is, say, 3.67, maybe I take it with a grain of salt and expect that it's potentially closer to 4 because they're taking an average fly ball, a home run to fly ball rate that was 10%, and it's like you said, this year hasn't increased up to like 13% or so. So, you know, maybe it does affect it in a more negative way. So I guess there are a couple of different factors, but I don't think it should change what your view of a certain player is unless you know that they're more prone to giving up a fly ball, because if they're more prone to giving up the fly ball with the sabermetrics reading potentially old data, it won't have as new as updated information. So because of the higher fly ball, home run to fly ball percentage, it would take into effect a different number than what you would have expected for your pitcher, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It was either that or I could have lost like every single listener. I knew it could have gone either way.
So. Right. No, I completely get it. And I thank you for entertaining that thought. It's longer than we entertain most of mine around here, so that's a plus.
Well, anyway, as you were bringing up during that little spiel of yours, you had brought up that you went to a baseball game with Mr. Chuck Anderson. So why don't you guys tell me a little bit about that?
It was amazing. Chuck is exactly like how you would imagine him in person. Probably a little more taller. More taller? And
that's not good English, but it's okay. We'll let it slip.
Yeah, I know. And putting us two side by side, in which I was putting the over-under at least 45 inches of shoulder, Chuck. What do you think?
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, we definitely helped fill up a role, and then Evan was there with a bunch of his friends, a lot of interesting characters, and that was fun. And, you know, the wife and I walked around, and the wife was very tolerant of the fact that Evan and I were going to sit and talk baseball nerdy stuff for most of the game. We tried to talk about other stuff, but we came back to baseball nerdy stuff in the end.
I earned bonus points because I help her find the taco location inside the park. So I think that definitely helped out. But Chuck was good luck Chuck, because the Brewers almost got swept. But a little three-run magic led off by, mind if I just take the reins? And Eric Thames looks awesome. I know we've talked a lot about where you expect his draft price to be next year. Chuck, it was a big topic for us. How high are you going on Thames next year?
Well, I don't think Eric Thames should fall past being a top 7 or 8 first baseman if he continues to have such excellent control of the strike zone and continues to accumulate power numbers. I do think he's still going to be in a great ballpark. I think he's still going to have enough pieces around him. I mean, he's accumulating stats now without Ryan Braun behind him. I do think he's going to have outfield eligibility, which I think is going to help a lot more than most people realize right now. When they get in front of their draft boards, they'll realize that outfield isn't so deep. So I think Eric Thames should finish somewhere, should definitely be a top 100 player, and definitely should not fall beyond the top 8 first baseman. That's my theory.
I personally think for at least – it really depends on the format, but he's done a very good job, even if he has kind of cooled down over the last few weeks. But if you look at him in an OBP league, his OBP right now for the entire season is 413. Like, he's just, even over the last 15 days, he's accumulated 11 walks. And he's getting on base a ton, and I'm sure that he's going to get on base because without Braun in the lineup, they don't have really anyone else to fear, so you can put him on first base a little bit, especially if he hasn't been running as well. He hasn't been a big threat on the base pass as we thought he could potentially be, but he's shown power. He's scoring a lot of runs, and the RBIs are going to keep coming. You know, he's had a bunch of solo home runs already on the season, but I think that he's already going to be a top, like, 80 player if he's able to keep this up for the remainder of the season. And in terms of first baseman, you know, it's not always going to be he's not going to necessarily jump to top 30 and be like a top 4 first baseman, but, you know, he's going to be usable in a standard league. He's going to be someone that you're relying on for the entire season. And like I said, in OBP leagues, he's going to get an even larger boost than he is in a standard league. And even in a standard league, he's still hitting 273, which is still a usable thing, considering that there's other first basemen who are like Chris Davis, and they just hit, you know, sub 250 each season, and they still have tons of power. So it's nice to have a first baseman with good average and good power. Glad I put you guys to sleep.
Well, no, I just wasn't sure where you were going to go with the conversation necessarily.
I thought maybe you were going to take over at the end, but
no, I really don't have anything to, like, I mean, it plays well for the park. You know, I definitely, that was the one thing that I did notice, is that the ball does carry really well out to right field. And I think it's helped out guys like Travis Shaw this year. And I think Thames could definitely benefit from that. I don't know. You know, we've kind of seen a discrepancy in what actually happened in the first base pool, as compared to what we thought was going to happen. I think everybody was like shallow, bye, bye, bye. And it's kind of turned out to be a little bit deeper than we thought, but I still think he's got a ton of power. And, I mean, there's people that will look at his May and June numbers right now and just think that he's not doing very well and it completely fell off the table. But I do still see a lot of potential from Thames.
I can move forward with the Brewer conversation. First of all, I'll say that yesterday the panels were open. When the panels are open and the roof is open, that's when you really got to watch out at Miller Park. That's when the ball really, really carries well. Now, whenever the panels are open, it carries well. When the panels are closed and the roof is closed, it doesn't carry as well, but it's still an offensively friendly park. Now, my Brewer that I want to talk about is the Brewers themselves are in a mode where they're trying to rebuild. For this rebuild to be successful, they have to find some actual pitching. And so I wanted to delve into the numbers and see if there was any chance that Chase Anderson could be their form of one of two pitchers, either Dallas Keuchel or maybe closer to Colin McHugh. Okay, Chase Anderson, 29 years old. He's in his first year of arbitration eligibility. He was acquired with Aisan Diaz, who's a top 50 prospect by every ranking, for Gene Segura a few years ago. The interesting things I found about Chase Anderson's numbers so far this year, everyone knows, you know, he's got a 3.3 ERA. His FIP is 3.4. He was the guy with the 4.3 xFIP. His K percentage is up 4% this year. The biggest thing that you see statistically is last year he had a 14.8%. Home run to fly ball percentage. This year it's only 7%. So I delved a little bit further and I looked into some pitch mix information, and he is using his regular four-seam fastball almost 12% of the time, and that's up 4% over last year. His changeup is down 2% from last year in usage, but the K rate is up 4% on each of those two pitches. He's also using a cutter. He's using his curve a little bit less, but a little more effectively. So, but most of the way, batted ball data and everything say he's been roughly the same pitcher. And the biggest thing is the home run to fly ball rate is down. So do you guys see any hope that Chase Anderson could be, you know, help formulate the base of moving forward of a rebuild that the Brewers need with him having 3 years of arbitration eligibility left as a Brewer? What do you think, Ben? Lead the charge.
I mean, I liked Chase Anderson. I wasn't as big of a proponent of him as I am now. I think he's still more of a mid-tier type guy, but he's been helpful this year, and he's definitely going to be helpful for them going forward if he's able to keep up similar ratios and K rate to what he's been able to do, because he has been pretty good this year, considering that they weren't sure exactly what they were going to get out of him, but they were more hopeful than anything. But I definitely think that they've done a good job in what they've been able to acquire out of him so far. So if he's either able to keep this up, or for, you know, for whatever reason, say they fall out, sorry, it could happen, Chuck, but say they fall out of the race, I don't know. Maybe they consider trading him if he does a good job and they actually get a good prospect back. I don't know. But I think so far he's proved that he's someone that they can rely on going forward, and I think that's important.
I mean, I've been vocal about being pro Chase Anderson. I believe I've said that on the podcast before. He's bounced back. He's had two great starts. But he had six starts last year where he had three or more walks, and he's already got five of those outings this year. So I'm not really 100% sure how I feel about him walking this fine line with the control and also keeping the home run to fly ball rate down. And I think if kind of one of those things caves, or both of them, which would be a complete, you know, disaster, then you would see, you know, 4.5 ERA Chase Anderson. But I do think the one thing, if you're talking about, you know, long term for the Brewers, is that I do think if you just need an innings eater, at least, I mean, he could be a guy that goes out and throws 185 innings for you. I don't understand why that's not possible. But it's not going to be fantastic. It might be, the, you know, sub 4.25 this year, but, I mean, it's not going to be great.
So you're putting his ceiling as a mediocre McHugh.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, do you expect Cy Young Keuchel out of him?
Well, I don't.
That was the other name you threw out.
I know. I don't expect Cy Young Keuchel out of him. I think that's too lofty, but, I mean, we have to dream, you know, Brett Phillips got called up today. You know, we have to dream that there's a pitching base somewhere within what we have. And the Brewers are pitching above expectation right now in their starting rotation by and large.
Well, and, yeah, did you see Jimmy Nelson on Friday night? Of course they're pitching above expectation. Exactly.
Yeah, I expected somebody to say I should have a little more hope in Jimmy Nelson than I do Chase Anderson. And I do to a certain extent, especially with Jimmy Nelson being younger. I mean, Chase Anderson being 29 years old already. But they're going to have to try and juice. They're going to try and have to get milk from some of these rocks that they have on their staff. And I'm hopeful for Chase Anderson. And I've seen a pretty strong progression right now of him. I've noticed that since the numbers don't look all that different across the board, his locating of the fastball has to be better, because there's not enough of a discrepancy in anything else besides the fly ball staying in the yard to explain this huge difference so far. So I hope his fastball location stays as good as it's been. Ben, what are your overview thoughts of the Milwaukee Brewers?
There was two players that, for me, jumped out when we had discussed that we were going to talk about the Brewers. Those two players are Keon Broxton and Jonathan Villar. Jonathan Villar last year put up 19 home runs, had 62 steals, and a .369 OBP. This year, he's got 5 home runs, 14 steals, and a .284 OBP. So obviously, there's a huge difference in the OBP. It's taking down his steal numbers. Hey, Chuck, you've watched a ton more games of Brewers than I've been able to this year, so I'd like to get your idea of what's going on with Jonathan Villar. But then in terms of Keon Broxton, the dude's K machine. He strikes out, I think, over the last 130 games that he's played, I think he struck out roughly about 162 times. But during that time, he's also had 33 steals and about 15 or so home runs. So obviously in a season-long roto, those numbers are very useful, but he has a 311 OBP this year, and he's got a 242 average. So it's not great all the way around, but what are your thoughts on these two players exactly, Chuck?
Well, they make up a large chunk of these projects that David Stearns has acquired as the Brewer general manager. And I do believe more so in VR long term because he's younger. You know, he's 26-year-old season this year. And he offers you more value defensively as far as being, you know, being able to play the middle infield style positions. So that will bolster up his trade value going forward as well. I mean, Keon Broxton plays up the middle too, being a center fielder, but his strikeout rate is even traditionally been much higher than VR's, and VR's never exactly had great command of the strike zone. I just think that VR had such an extended stretch of showing off a talent that I don't think that the Brewers are going to completely cut him off or send him back to the minors or do anything like that. I think they're going to let him play through it. They realize this is a stage of where we're at. I do think there's a chance that this is a form of a sophomore slump. I know he had a lot of at-bats when he was with Houston, but they were sporadic at best at times, and he never really seemed like he was part of their plan. So, and enough of these shortstops, which I mentioned in my Of Note column last year, enough of these shortstops, they grow in fits and spasms. I mean, Elvis Andrus is number 12 on the player radar right now, and he's a guy that we had written off and written on. You know, we had thought he was going to be good, and we thought he wasn't going to be. We've done that like three or four times. Well, he started playing when he was 20 or 21 years old in the bigs. So these guys, you have to take it on almost a year-to-year basis and realize that you can't necessarily count on them, but you can't count them out either. Andrelton Simmons is another guy we've done the same thing to. Xander Bogaerts, he's a power hitter, he's not, etc. So the middle infield, that's where it's at. So as far as I'm concerned, I think VR is a much better long-term play. I think the outfield depth in the Brewer organization is probably going to land Keon Broxton somewhere else, and it's probably going to be in a far lesser place to hit than Miller Park. The odds are against him going anywhere better to hit than he has right now. So those are my thoughts on those two players.
What are your thoughts, Evan?
Well, on Jonathan VR, I wasn't really a big fan, but when you look at a guy with a speed calling card, really the number that I sometimes look first at in like his splits is how he's hitting on ground balls, because obviously he should be hitting a little bit better. He's not this year compared to what he did last year, which kind of fueled his season, I think. And he's just not hitting the ground balls as hard. Last year, his hard hit percentage on ground balls was almost 22%. This year it's down to 16.5%, which is basically his career average before 2016. So I'm not a VR guy. And regardless of what you see at Miller Park with the OPS numbers, Eric Sogard is not a better hitter than Eric Thames, even though the OPS numbers may lead you to think that. I think VR is a fine player for what the Brewers are doing, but I'm just not sold as a fantasy asset. As far as Broxton, I mean, you could still look at growing pains for this kid. I really do like him as a player. And the one... It kind of made me go tangent in my brain to maybe another person that we may want to hit on. Talking about the outfield scenario for the Brewers, Chuck was saying that, you know, Domingo Santana could be a, you know, a no name in dynasty leagues in, you know, 3 years if the beer hadn't gotten to me too much at that point, and that was what I was hearing from him. I watched him flail, you know, pretty bad over the weekend, but he's shown a lot of pop. And I mean, what do you think the outfield scenario looks like for the Brewers long term, Chuck? Because we did have that talk on Domingo Santana, no?
No, we definitely did. Well, like I said, the one thing that I'm holding against Broxton that maybe I shouldn't is that Corey Ray and Lewis Brinson, more eminently, because he's further along, and, you know, Brett Phillips to a lesser extent, but he's already here now. But the point being is that a lot of their org depth is in the outfield. And it's hard to fathom that all of these players that are, they're borderline, they're fringy, they've got some issues. I mean, when we're speaking about Keon Broxton, he's a decent center fielder and generally a good defender. When we're talking about Domingo Santana, he's a dreadful defender. He plays outfield like a hockey goalie. He kicked the ball again tonight. It's hard to imagine they used him in center field for a while, his first year in Milwaukee, because he just is. He just doesn't seem to care a lot about defense, and that's not a Craig Counsell thing. Craig Counsell generally weeds those guys out, like he did with Chris Davis with a K, which maybe we wish he didn't, but he did with not having a DH spot for him, etc. So. I have a hard time believing that their outfield right now looks much like it's going to look in a few years. I mean, as soon as they can get rid of Braun, I think they will. I don't know how that'll happen. Probably happen with him having only a couple years left on his contract. And I think all this influx of talent that they have in the outfield in their organization is what's going to man the outfield. I don't see a lot of holdover or carryover effect from the guys that we're seeing on the field right now. I really don't.
I mean, for me, based on everything that we have at our disposal, I do believe that Lewis Brinson is probably as good, if not a little better, of a defender in center field. Keon Broxton, I think, is a pretty good overall center fielder because he has good speed, so he has decent range, and he's not a bad fielder overall. So he could end up being able to stay. Brett Phillips is currently up because of a paternity leave for Travis Shaw, so we'll see if he does stay up after that few days has, in fact, passed, if he's hitting and performing well. If not, they could easily send him back down. But I think if Braun does get traded, you'll see Lewis Brinson come up, and either Broxton or Brinson, most likely Broxton, probably would get moved over to left field. So you could end up having an outfield of Broxton, Brinson, and Santana in the outfield with Brett Phillips as a potential fourth outfielder. So it could end up being that way at the end of the season. Corey Ray is still probably 2 years away from even being up. And during that time, Domingo Santana, Keon Broxton, they could wear out their welcome. So I don't think we really have to worry about Corey Ray at this time unless both of those players in Broxton and Santana are really performing well. And I think that's a problem that the Brewers would really like to have in a few years' time. But as of right now, if Braun doesn't get traded, you can rest assured that either Broxton or Santana, one of those three have to go during this season. There's no real way around it. Do you guys disagree?
I agree completely. I was looking at it more from like a three-year out kind of maneuver. But hopefully there's enough outfield uncertainty that Thames can keep outfield eligibility here for the next couple of years, because that would be great for us fantasy nerds.
Right.
Yes. Why don't we move into the next team that we're going to be discussing? We're going to be discussing the Minnesota Twins. So, Chuck, why don't you start us off with who your player on the Twins would be?
Well, I can kind of do that. I was looking around. I tried to get some interest going in Eddie Rosario, and I couldn't do it. Then I thought, well, I wonder what would happen if the Twins lost Brandon Kinstler, if he either got traded, if they fell out of the race, or if he got hurt. And then I was trying to figure out who I thought might be the next in line to get saves. And it was pretty rough sledding to figure out who they might go to. And I did notice that they have the worst WAR of any. They're the 30th ranked relief pitching team in baseball, according to Fangraphs as of right now. So my question to you guys is, who's the backup closer in Minnesota? Is it, is it a name we're familiar with, or is it somebody that we're not familiar with? What do you guys think?
I'll take the easy road and just say that Glenn Perkins has been throwing bullpen sessions, supposedly looking at a mid-June activation. So, I mean, hopefully Kinsler's can kind of just stay where he is. Not that I think Perkins is going to be an overly, fantastic option, but I just think it's a name a lot better than some of these other ones they're staring at.
And for me, I have a couple of different options. One, obviously, the easiest thing I think would be, like Evan was saying, is going with Glenn Perkins. But I think if you were picking someone who was in the bullpen at this current time, you could maybe go with Tyler Rogers. He's currently number two in the team in terms of saves plus holds. He doesn't actually have any holds on the season, but or any saves on the season, but he's got 13 holds, which means that he's been used in a lot of winning situations. Now, he's got a 3.38 ERA, which isn't great, but it's not terrible at the same point in time, given the structure of the Twins' bullpen, as you were saying. His whip leaves a little bit to be desired, but I do think that the Twins could use him in a pinch if Glenn Perkins, say, wasn't ready. The person who I thought was going to come into the season and potentially relieve Kinsler was JT Chargot, who has been down in the minors. He's one of those prospects that they've kind of been expecting could potentially come up and be a closer. He's got a good fastball. He doesn't have a ton of pitches, but he's the type of pitcher that could excel as a closer. So those were my two options for what I was thinking could happen if Kinsler got traded.
Okay, and then one more question for you guys, and this is going off your guys' deep baseball knowledge here. Now that we have Jose Berríos up and looks like he's settling in as a good major league pitcher, is there another pitcher that can come up and take the place of some of these scrubs that they're trying to get by with these days? Is there somebody that you like next on the farm that I should know about? Ben, you're a dynasty guy, man. I'm putting you on the spot. What do you got for me?
I don't think that there's anyone that's going to be coming up at this current time. They have a couple players that they were thinking of potentially keeping as starters, but they've kind of thought to maybe potentially move them more to the bullpen. A couple players that they were thinking could end up being a Tyler J. They were thinking that he could potentially be a starter, but he has had a lot of injuries to this point in his career, so they are starting to think that maybe a switch to the bullpen is better suited for him, which would be a shame because I think he could be decent, but he's probably not going to be that – he wouldn't probably be that great of a starter. There's a couple under the next best person is probably Cole Stewart, but I don't really know if he's the next person that they'd want up. I know that Steven Gonsalves is someone that they do want to come up, but he's a few years away. So I don't know if they have any immediate player that they can inject into the starting rotation, unfortunately. But I think that at least for right now, if they're able to just rely on Hector Santiago, Jose Berríos and Irvin Santana, at least for the next year and a half, they're able to potentially, if the offense keeps improving, they may be able to go out to free agency and acquire someone while they wait for some of the lower level minor leaguers to come up. Is there anyone that you wanted to point out, Evan?
Well, I was going to say, how would you feel about Tyler Duffy getting a shot at a starting job if, you know, things were to go insanely wrong? But I was looking at his splits going through a lineup more than once, and they were pretty god-awful. So we'll kind of shoulder that talk. I don't want to skip past Berríos, but I don't really have deep Twins names. I just think Berríos has been awesome. I think he's been a guy who has shown that he adjusts well coming up through the minors, and I'm really high on him. I don't know how high you think he could potentially sit. Chuck, you're a player rater guy. Where does Berríos finish on the end of your player rater, do you think?
I think he's settled back in a little bit. I mean, it's hard to come out at a rate that he was at in his first two starts and be able to keep it. But I do think, you know, he's definitely got the potential to be a legitimate number two starter already next year. So that's pretty high praise. And his numbers in the minors were always so sterling. I was surprised with his struggles last year. So, I think there's going to be so many question marks at pitching next year that it's really hard to gauge where people are going to land, because it depends on how healthy people come back. Is Madison Bumgarner, Noah Syndergaard, et cetera, and so forth? Are those the same guys they used to be? But at the same time, when you got a young guy with upside like this, I think you're going to see people start to take gambles on him younger and younger. So I think he's probably going to land somewhere towards a late 20s, early 30s pitcher next year in drafts. if he keeps up at the pace that he's at right now, despite the fact that he's in an American League and in the American League and not particularly on a team that we believe in. One more note for me to add on the pitching. The Twins have approached their pitching differently than maybe people expected them to, insofar as going out and getting, you know, signing Irving Santana and acquiring Hector Santiago, you know, in a trade, etc. So I think you might see them, if they're sort of in the race and no one's taking control of the wild card in the American League, I think you could see them acquire a middle of the road kind of innings eater with a little bit of upside kind of guy to actually pitch for them down the stretch this year, because I just don't think they've got the horses in the stable right now to get them anywhere as close to the finish line. And if I was a pure Twins fan, I kind of am from afar because they're the closest American League team to us. But if I was a Twins fan, I would say that that I like the fact that they're willing to use a little ingenuity in creating some extra pitching depth when their organization isn't ready to provide it for them yet. So that's where I'm on the Twins.
Ben, did you have any Jose Barrios thoughts?
I'm a big Barrios fan. I was last year, and I was very disappointed with how he had come up and started his big league career. But it was good. I think that it was good that he was sent down, and they pushed him to the point where he was ready, and then they still kept him down, and he was able to fine-tune anything that he felt he may have needed. And he's come up, and he's done a very good job to this point. And I think if he's able to keep it up, to make the short answer, I think he's easily a top 35 pitcher if he's able to keep this up. I think he's got the ceiling of maybe a top 18 at best, but I think we're still a year and a half away from potentially reaching that ceiling. As long as he's able to keep maintaining a good K rate and everything, which it seems like he's able to do, I think that he's going to be a 3.3 potential ERA guy with a 1.1 whip, which I think most owners would be very happy, especially if he can get close to a K per inning. So,
awesome. If you wanted to know my thoughts, I know you don't, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Max Kepler, a guy that I was kind of interested in acquiring in a dynasty league. I think the kind of power profile is legit for him. I didn't know if we would see a regression this year with him getting, you know, kind of his second big exposure. I like him. He's been hitting pretty high up in the lineup. Do you guys have any Max Kepler thoughts, or if you want to expand it to the Twins outfield in general?
Well, I am preemptive on Max Kepler, because while he was coming up through the system, I heard a lot of prognosis that he was likely to be just a fourth outfielder. And I've sort of been rooting for him to exceed that, because he's the first German-born player, I believe, to start in Major League Baseball or to make the show. So I was really happy. I was really happy for him about that. You know, he started out like gangbusters last year when he came up, and he seems like he's just sort of leveled off into a sort of mediocre, middle of the road production. And with the original prognosis of him, I guess my guts have been telling me that that's kind of who he is. Like, he's good enough to be a major league player, but I'm not sure he's a upper division regular for a team that's actually trying to contend. So hopefully he proves me wrong. Ben, do you think I'm wrong on Max Kepler?
I don't know if you're necessarily wrong. I don't think he's going to necessarily profile as a fourth outfielder, especially given the situation of what their outfielders are doing at this current time. I think that he may not necessarily be a top 30 outfielder, even a top 40 outfielder, but I think he could, you know, potentially settle into a top 40 to top 50 role overall. I think he's still got like 18 home run power. I think he's still around a 280 average guy. He's going to get you decent counting stats, especially as the offense keeps improving. And, you know, he'll chip in a few steals. If he's able to get close to double digits, then you'd be pretty happy, especially if you plug that with 18 home runs. I think the outfielder that is probably having the best season for them is the one that is no longer on the team. That's actually Aaron Hicks. And I'm sure at this point they probably wish that they had Aaron Hicks back, especially if they knew that he was going to keep playing at this capacity. because the outfielders that they've used, you know, right now, technically on the player radar, the best outfielder that they've had is Miguel Sano, and we know that he's not going to have any more outfield eligibility going into next season. But the fact that the next best is very tight race between Max Kepler and Robbie Grossman is kind of saying something, wouldn't you say?
I think I would have Kepler all day and 3 days on Sunday, as Chuck would say. I don't understand why you guys don't think he could be a 20 home run bat, especially if he embraces kind of a more fly ball profile. I was also looking at his ability to basically limit his soft contact percentage. So his ability to make quality contact, he's got the 15th lowest soft hit percentage in the majors right now. So I mean, I'm not expecting him to be a top 25 outfielder or anything, but I don't, if the temperature on Max Kepler, if you will, is closer to where you guys are thinking he is, as opposed to where I think he is, then if somebody wants to throw him in as like an add-on in a trade or something like that, then I would be all over it. And I'm not seeing where the hate's coming from, essentially.
It's not that I'm giving a lot of hate. It's just that I think if I was able to max out everything with Max Kepler, I think he goes to around 20 home runs. I mean, not that 18's far away, but I don't see him being much more than between 18 and 25. And I understand 25 is still decent, but in today's environment where you have so many players that are hitting home runs, I don't know that Kepler hitting between 18 and 25 is really any more valuable than someone else who's going to be doing it, especially because he's maybe not going to be a 300 hitter. He may not get more than 80 RBIs or 80 runs in the season. He could, especially, like I said, as the offense keeps improving. I think the thing that will help boost him up the player radar is if he's able to get close to 20 steals, or get close to double-digit steals, and have close to 20 home run power. But it really just depends. As the rest of the offense keeps improving, and, you know, there's some players in the minors that could come up, and if they push him down into like the 6 hole for whatever reason or the 5 hole, his counting stats are going to go down. So it really just depends on how he's able to make improvements the more and more time he has up in the major leagues, and we'll be able to see if he's able to improve better than a top 40 outfielder.
Well, I just don't see. He's hitting .269 right now with a .307 BABIP. Last year he had .235 with a .261 BABIP. You know, it's certainly conceivable that we're giving up on him a little bit too soon because he's only 24 years old and maybe he didn't have a huge prospect pedigree, which does not always bring about the fact that that's the ceiling is necessarily low on him.
But aren't his parents ballerinas or something stupid like that? Like, he may not have the prospect pedigree, but prospect guys look at that he comes from an athletic background, and he is an athletic guy that can kind of grow a little bit, I think. If his Fangraphs page says he's 6'4", 205, I mean, pack on a little bit of muscle and elevate the ball a little bit and see what happens.
Well, you know, if you want to make Max Kepler your pet project, I don't blame you. I'm just going to say that although I could be wrong and we could be selling him short since he's only 24, I'm just going to say that park is not necessarily great for home run power, and I'm still pretty skeptical. I'm pretty skeptical that he ever maxes out to being more than, 35 to 40 kind of outfielder, and that doesn't excite me because I don't see enough upside in the speed, et cetera, that I can get excited. He had one good year in the minors with 18 steals, but he really didn't show any speed in the lower minors, which usually means that it's pretty unlikely that he's going to turn into a speed guy either. So I'm skeptical about his long-term fantasy value, but he's one of those guys. I mean, he's certainly got enough skill to be a major league outfielder and to be a regular for this time. So if he puts it all together when he's 26 or 27, I'll be putting my tail between my legs again. But I don't see it happening.
I mean, he's had 650, a little over 650 plate appearances, and he's got, you know, a double-digit walk rate, basically. I mean, he doesn't strike out a ton. I think you could see an evolution in his batting eye, like project for a little bit of growth. Come on, have a little bit of positivity, Rain Cloud Anderson.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, well, on to the next one. Ben, do you have anybody else you wanted to talk about on the Twins?
God, this is a tough question. I don't really know. No, I don't think there's anyone else. I think we've kind of touched on everyone. I would have probably picked Irvin Santana, but I think at this point, you know, there's not a lot to say on him. I guess we could talk about him briefly. He's a good quality starts guy. He's not going to get a ton of strikeouts. He's going to keep his whip, you know, relatively low. You know, 1.2 is still a decent whip. I think he's probably more of a 1.15 type guy. His ERA is going to be sub 3.5. So, you know, I think that with what you're getting this year, you're very happy. You know there's going to be some regression. But I think that Irvin Santana has done a pretty good job considering what he's got left in his arsenal. I don't know if you guys have a ton to say about him, but I think that as of right now, it's good to see Irvin Santana having a good season.
I think you should have sold him probably 2 weeks ago, and your value is diminishing on Irvin Santana, personally.
I think that's a little bit too negative. He has had some good solid seasons in the past, and the thing about him is that the other seasons he's had good streaks, which is what Evan's getting at. He's had good streaks, and then all of a sudden he's struggled. So I understand where Evan is, but I think you've invested so little in Santana, and I think people are so skeptical on him. I just also want to mention that it's forgotten sometimes that he's a guy who had a partially torn UCL, and a lot of people thought his arm was a time bomb. And that time bomb has turned into, you know, 5 or 6 years of pretty quality major league work, avoiding the knife and avoiding, you know, the complete injury. So I think that should be brought to light when we think about Irvin Santana as well. So, you know, he's one of those guys. I think he's the best of the group of, you know, Jason Vargas and Mike Leake, the best of these pitchers that relatively came out from nowhere to really dominate early this season. And I'm a proud owner of Irvin Santana, who I took late in a 12-team league to fill my last pitching spot. So maybe that's why I'm bolstering him up. I want to be right in thinking that Irvin Santana could be good for the whole season.
Okay, maybe I was a little bit harsh, and I shouldn't have been as Debbie Downer. But what I'm saying is that he had 5 quote-unquote blow-up starts last year where he had 5 earned runs or more. Already this year he has 3, and they've all come after that amazing start where he rattled off 6 quality starts where he didn't allow more than 1 earned run. What I'm saying is there was a obvious sell-high window for him, and that if you waited to do that, you are losing value, and I don't think Santana's value, like, it can go up if he has some good outings, but I think you missed the window to sell on Santana, and personally, I would unload if I could.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to our last team, and that's going to be talking about the Colorado Rockies. So, Evan, since you were a little bit negative at the end of that, why don't you bring up a pitcher on the Rockies who's actually better than someone on the Twins?
I mean,
in all seriousness, why don't you talk about a player that you like on the Rockies?
Well, a guy that I like on the Rockies, even though he's not playing right now, is John Gray. I'm really excited to see that he's coming back, throwing a bullpen session. The one thing in his player note that I was reading was he was saying he hadn't gripped a changeup in 2 weeks. Like, he wasn't even just sitting around gripping the ball. Like, what the hell was he doing with all his time off? He wasn't phenomenal to start the season, but he was a guy I know we had talked about being, you know, a better home pitcher and things like that. I know it was a foot injury, not an arm injury. Do you guys have any hope for John Gray? And would you be trying to buy in this little window where he's hurt before he comes back? Or do you think you'd even be able to complete a deal like that? Do you think his owner is, you know, well, I've held on to him this long, I'm gonna wait and see what happens?
I'm pretty sure any owner who's held on to him this long is probably not going to look to trade him because it kind of defeats the point of holding on to him for over a month. But I think that if you were able to acquire him in some type of deal, it wouldn't be the worst thing because I think he'll be better than what he's shown. But I'm still a little bit skeptical. I think I still need to see it for a little bit longer of a time period given the fact that it is cores and everything. But I think I have as much hope for John Gray as I've had for any Colorado pitcher in a while. What about you, Chuck?
Well, we spent a lot of time on the other podcast talking about John Gray last year and if he could be a quality top 100 kind of guy despite having to pitch his home games at Coors Field. And I still believe in John Gray to that extent. Unfortunately, last year he really came on. It was kind of he grew in fits and spasms last year, and he had some really rough outings and some rough stretches last year that I was hoping he would be able to pitch through this year and show a little bit, keep things a little bit more flatline instead of the big ups and the big downs. But we haven't had that chance yet because of the injury. But he's universally considered the most talented Rockies pitcher, and there's been a lot of extra fantasy value in Rockies pitchers to this point this year. I do think that the fall of the Rockies has basically started already, and I'm a little concerned about them moving forward, even in the short term. But John Gray he's the best talent on that staff, and he's generally considered a usable fantasy asset everywhere by most by most pundits already at this point. So I'm going to be looking very closely for growth, but it's not a guy I would count on. He's a guy more that I would hope to, I would hope to have and get a boost from, but I wouldn't be counting on great things from him yet at this point, because I think he's missed enough time now that he's almost going to have to start over a little bit this year. And that's not always easy to do in the middle of the season.
Right. Well, the name that probably should have been the answer, although I was going to make the joke that John Gray should have sat around and played with his balls a little more while he was on the DL. But yeah, that didn't happen. Tyler Chatwood, who's been amazing on the road over the past 2 years in 120 innings on the road. He's got a sub 190 batting average against, and again at home. In Coors, hitters are hitting over 300 against him. So he's probably, with any Rockies pitcher, you're basically playing the game of I'm going to start them on the road. I'm going to pick my spots at home. I think Tyler Chatwood is probably, especially considering Tyler Anderson's going on the DL with the knee thing. If you wanted to talk about another Rockies pitcher, he would probably be it.
If we wanted to. I'm just kidding. The thing that I note about him is that he's just, the 7.4 Ks per nine is just really not enough to get excited about, even though it's up from last year. I just, it's so hard. I don't prefer to ever be playing the home and away game. It just seems like, you fall behind on innings, you fall behind in strikeouts when you have members of it. If you can avoid having to platoon a starter, which is basically what you end up doing, if you can avoid having to platoon a starter, I always prefer it. So I had high hopes for Tyler Chatwood a couple years ago already, and although he's had some good stretches for a Rockies pitcher, I don't really prefer to be trying to mine for fantasy gold amongst sort of run-of-the-mill Rockies starters. Are you with me there, Ben?
I'm not a big Tyler Chatwood guy. It's nice that he's got 5 wins on the season, but while he's got 60 strikeouts through 72 innings, he's not a massive strikeout guy. I don't like the fact that he's already walked 35 batters at this point during the season. That's not a good number, and you don't want to be putting people on base, especially in Coors. But I'm not the type of person that wants to necessarily go and play that type of game, but you have to worry about who's going where. I feel like if you're going to be doing that, there's other pitchers on the staff that you could probably rely a little bit more on. Like Antonio Senzatella, I'd rather rely on him a little bit more than Tyler Chatwood. I'd rather rely on Jeff Hoffman when he's actually pitching.
So it really just depends on what type of team you have. But if I was trying to stream someone, I'm probably not looking to stream Tyler Chatwood, even if he's on the road. So it's just not someone who I'm looking to really use at this point this year. So.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's get out of the Rockies pitching, because I think that's kind of where we all want to be. And I think the hitter that I want to hear your guys' opinion on most is Ian Desmond, who has done all of his damage pretty much offensively against the Padres and kind of sucked everywhere else against non-Padres opponents since he came back from the DL. He's only taken 3 walks. One of them was intentional. So I don't know if you think it's – I mean, obviously, he's got a little bit of rust to shake off after missing the beginning of the season. But given that he's not a huge walk guy, if it's something you're concerned about, or what your guys' thoughts are in the Ian Desmond department.
I would like Desmond to be able to come back to the type of hitter that he was, but – we have seen that hand injuries and wrist injuries have sapped power, so I can understand why he's not hitting for as much power, but it's kind of strange that he has been better on the road in terms of his slugging percentage and everything to start the season. So I'm thinking that he'll be able to round into shape a little better over the next month, maybe even sooner than that. But once he starts rounding into shape, I'm probably going to be using him. So I think this is the time that you look to try to buy if you have the ability to. What do you think, Chuck?
I think he's been a really streaky player. I ended up owning him in NFBC this year because we drafted really early. So obviously I was disappointed by the injury and the type of injury that it was. I just feel like the situation in Colorado has worked out how I was afraid that it would, in so much as, okay, you don't have David Dahl up because he's been sidelined, but you had the Mark Reynolds thing instead. Reynolds at least has slowed down, and now I agree with Ben in this is the time where if you need a huge boost or you need to be able to catch lightning in a bottle could be Ian Desmond for the second half of the season, because Mark Reynolds has turned into more of Mark Reynolds lately. He's had a few home runs lately, but those are all the extra base hits that he's had. So I would agree that this is a good time to invest in Desmond, because I think when he gets hot, he's going to get very, very hot. But unfortunately, he's had season-long spells where he's been cold in the past. So if he's in extended spring training, maybe he comes out and he starts lighting it up. But unfortunately, there's at least a 10 to 15% chance that he doesn't get it going at all. So it's one of those guys that's got a huge variety of outcomes attached to him the rest of the season, in my opinion.
The other thing, I guess, while I was kind of thinking around, was we had talked a little bit about Carlos Gonzalez's struggles. I know before we fired the mics up, Chuck had kind of harped on, I forget what the bigger surprise was, but Carlos Gonzalez has been terrible. This is the worst he's looked since the 2014 season, which was the crazy year where they pulled the tentacled mass out of his hand. So, Chuck, do you think Carlos Gonzalez is hurt, or this is just a cold streak for him, or what is going on with Carlos Gonzalez?
Well, he doesn't look hurt, and his swing doesn't look like it's that much different than it's been in the past. He's one of those guys. He's kind of like this year's version of what Jose Bautista was when he played last year, meaning that he's not the easiest guy to look at and say, well, this is what's wrong, you know? So to me, he's a wonderful guy that's in the same zone as Ian Desmond in if you need a big boost and somebody is tired of him, see exactly what happens, because he has hit the ball better in recent weeks. And we've seen him explode in a second half before. So if somebody's sold on him being left for dead, he's got an awfully athletic build. He still, you know, roams the outfield well, still swings hard. It's hard for me to see him being done right now. I think people are pulling the plug on him a little too soon if they're writing him off because he hasn't hit for average or power yet, because he is showing signs of improving right now. Do you agree with me, Ben?
I mean, I don't know if I necessarily think of it as signs of improving, but I think that he's definitely played better as of late, which is good for him because I do know that he can be a streaky player. It would be nice if he's able to rebound, but I'm starting to think that if he doesn't rebound and for some reason they do start to fall out of the race for any reason, I just don't know why they still have him on the roster, but I think that this could be the year that he actually gets traded because they do have so much depth in the minor league system that could come up. I mean, you have Jordan Patterson, who's probably a fourth outfielder type player, but you have Raymel Tapia, who's doing really well. You have David Dahl, who will come back from his injury. You still have Gerardo Parra. You have Ian Desmond, who could play the outfield. You know, there's just a ton of players that could come up and could end up playing the outfield that it could mean that this is the last season for Carlos Gonzalez. And who knows what that does to his fantasy value if he gets traded, especially if he has cold streaks like this. The hot streaks came at a good time in the past when he does play in Coors and you're able to reap some of the benefits. But if he's not playing half of his games in Coors, I think you could see like a drop off like what Tulowitzki had when he got traded. So I'm not sure if I really want any part of him, even if he is heating up. I think I'd rather try to move him as quick as I could if I'm a fantasy owner.
I mean, he's not even hitting that good at Coors this year. He's got a .237 batting average at home, but you could definitely play the BABIP card there for sure. But I definitely agree with what you said about him being moved, especially this being the last year of his contract and whatnot.
Oh, come on. How many years in a row do we have to hear it? This is like 6 years in a row we've heard about him getting traded.
I don't think they'll re-sign him though.
They don't trade outfielders. They stock outfielders like Cordwood. That's what they do. I mean, then all this time they traded Corey Dickerson. They got like seven playable major league outfielders.
That's actually the exact same thing Chuck said the first time because I remembered not knowing what the hell Cordwood was then. And I find it weird that he got ticked off by the Carlos Gonzalez trade talk and not the David Dahl talk because I know he was really low on where his draft stock was coming into the year.
Yeah, I was really low on David Dahl because of how this organization seems to manage, manage its outfielders and its – you know, it's commodities that it
maybe
has
you should have been low on him just because of the injury. Maybe that should have been a thing.
Yeah, that's true. But it would have been a mess regardless because they're still heavily invested in Parra, et cetera, and so forth. I wanted to mention something else about a Rockies player. I wanted to do a little checkup on Nolan Arenado, which seems kind of crazy. He went number 6 in ADP. He's on pace for the same amount of home runs as he had last year. He's a, 42, 41 home run guy the last couple years. But the thing about him this year is for some reason, I noticed that his pace is way off where he was on RBIs last year and way off on where he is on runs. 109 RBI pace and 97 run scored pace right now. And I just keep thinking to myself, wow, I mean, I never thought that you could be disappointing doing roughly the same thing that you were last year. But part of his intrinsic value was in those really lofted counting stats. And, 97 runs scored would not be all that great. I mean, the difference in the RBIs, maybe you can be accounted for with DJ LeMahieu turning back into a closer version of what we thought he was before last year. But I just wondering aloud if he's a guy who's going to slip to the back end of the first round next year because these counting numbers aren't Coors special.
I just want to hop in real quick, and I would say that part of those numbers is probably a function of the lineup around him, and the lineup around him includes Charlie Blackmon, who's parked 13 home runs this year and has a walk rate that has declined from what we've seen from him over the past 2 years, where he's kind of grown into being this like awesome player. So I think maybe just not having him around, because either he's not walking, he's striking out more, or, you know, he's just sitting on the bench because he trotted around the bases might have something to do with those. So I just wanted to throw that out there before Ben gave his thoughts.
I've never given a thought in my entire life. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wrong. Continue.
I mean, I understand that it's maybe not exactly what you're expecting from Nolan Arenado, but you do have to look at how this team has played to this point. You know, DJ LeMahieu hasn't been on base as much as he was last year. Trevor Story didn't start off well. Ian Desmond, you know, hasn't had his, you know, he's come back from his injury. David Dahl, who could have been the number two hitter, he's been out the entire season. You know, and the players behind him are doing well. You know, you have Mark Reynolds, who's doing good, but I understand why you would expect more out of Nolan Arenado, but at the same point in time, I don't think that you can be disappointed with the return he's given you. I mean, yes, I wouldn't be overly happy if I drafted him in the top five picks and he's given me the value he's given back, but it's not like he's returning you negative value overall. The return that Arenado has given you compared to players that were taken in the top 10, like Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Miguel Cabrera, you know, some of those players haven't given you back the same value, and they're worse on the player radar. There just isn't enough players that you can be happy with that have given you the return of what Nolan Arenado has. And while, yes, you would like better than top 30 value, at the same point in time, he's at least giving you top 30 value, so it's something that you can build on, and you know he's going to get better as the season goes and progresses. That average should climb. You know that he's probably still going to hit 40 home runs. He's probably going to drive in 115-plus people, and he's still probably going to score around 100 runs. So you know that he's going to get better, and you know that other players on the player radar that are ahead of him aren't going to stay this high up. You know that there's going to be some regression from other players. So if you have an owner in your league that's not overly happy with how Arenado's performed so far, then go and try to buy as quick as you can, because he's still going to be the same good Nolan Arenado that we come to expect.
The only other thing I'd like to mention about the Rockies is, do we have a good feel for what's going to happen going forward with their catching situation? I know they seem to be high on Garneau for a while this year. Tony Walters has played a lot. What do we know how the catching situation has really played out yet? Is there one that we should be looking to really truly invest in?
Is it Tom Murphy?
Tom Murphy comes back, they're going to have him be the permanent starter, and for good reason, because he's a very good catcher, and that's good ballpark to suit him. But he was expected back a couple weeks ago, and the fact that he's still not back is not necessarily the greatest thing, but I do expect that he should be back relatively soon, which, you know, it's a bit optimistic, but at the same point in time, once he comes back, I think that he could easily be a top eight catcher going forward. And we've talked about how bad catching landscape is, but he's recently caught back-to-back games in AAA. So, you know, I think that he could be, back within the next 10 days. So Tom Murphy is someone that I would go grab right now if I could.
All right, that's a good little Rockies update. I didn't realize that.
Did either of you guys have anyone else to discuss on the Rockies?
Pass.
I hate your passes. I hate them. We're going to jump into the next section. Evan, who's a player that was outside the top 100 picks this year that you felt you were most wrong on?
I know I said it as a throwaway line last week about how we may have talked about Michael Franco versus Jake Lamb at draft tables this year, but that happened, and I took Franco in some spots, and I just hate my life because Jake Lamb is awesome. I was wrong. I have him in some spots. I'm happy that I pulled that trigger, but I was definitely wrong not having him higher. Where is the ceiling for this guy? Because he's currently in my plans that I'm going to hang on to him in this 12-team league with five keepers. So, and it's a good team. It's not like I just don't have anybody on there. I don't think it's just a favorable home park. He's hitting pretty damn well on the road. I just wish he could do something against lefties, but I wonder how high, if everything just stayed the same, no injury stuff, you know, if he's stayed right around this level, where you think he could be drafted next year.
Well, I think third base has been a little bit underwhelming for the most part, especially as a depth position. And Jake Lamb is a guy who's in a great situation because he's soaking up at bats in the middle of that order while AJ Pollock has been hurt a lot. And he gets to feed off of Paul Goldschmidt. But all things considered, I'm really worried about his on-base percentage and his batting average going forward. So I think that sort of limits his upside for now. And he did have a huge slump at the end of last year that I think is going to be in the back of people's minds for a while. So I think he's a really good upside play. I think he's gone past some people for me, like he's gone past Castellanos and some other people that I thought maybe were in about the same range as him. But I still don't see him as someone that can really get into the upper echelon of third baseman until I see, a longer stretch of consistency. So I'll be surprised if he finishes, if he gets taken next year in the above the top 8 to 10 first base, third baseman. I think he's got that kind of ceiling right now until he shows a little bit better plate discipline.
I mean, he's the number one player on the player rater. I'd take him over Bregman all day. I'd take him over probably Kyle Seager at this point. Beltre's not, going to, I don't know. Is he Beltre playing next year?
Yeah, I think Beltre is going to be around for at least
I didn't want to speculate on him. But
the contract that he signed last year, he had another 2 years, so that runs through the end of next year. I don't see him just retiring with that 1 year. He may retire at the end of 2018, but I think that he'll play play at least through the 2018 season. So,
okay, him or Miguel Sano next year? I know we had talked about this afterwards, and
Miguel Sano, not close.
I would pick Sano.
Jake Lamb versus Alex Bregman next year.
Jake Lamb.
I think Alex Bregman's got a lot more upside. I think it's a relative toss-up.
Kyle Seager. Like I said, just using the names.
I would pick Seager. I'd pick Lamb, but I think that Seager has the potential to be better. It just really depends on if Lamb's able to keep the average at similar to where it is now. If that drops to like a 250 batting average, then I can't pick him over Seager.
I would still take Seager.
Rendon?
Well, Rendon's question is always with health, but I think the fact that he's in that lineup and the stretches that he's had and the fact that you're going to get more, more possibility of a variety of statistical categories he helps you in. And he's really safe in average when he's hitting, even when he's at three quarters of his health. I would still take Rendon.
Oh, that's tough. I think I'd pick Lamb, and that's just barely. It's the same kind of thing with Seager. I think I would pick Rendon over Seager, but if Lamb is able to keep the average up at this range, then I'd have him up here. If that average drops, I would pick Rendon.
Fair enough. So he's seventh to ninth third baseman next year?
I would probably have him like around the seventh third baseman.
Or third baseman, yeah.
And I, while I can agree with that, I think that probably points to the fact that there's a little more positional scarcity than we thought there was. And some of the guys that were eligible at third last year appear like they're not going to be next year. Jonathan VR, not that he's playing well, but guys like that that were ahead of him this year seem to be falling out of the running. So, and what you said about Beltre certainly matters as well. I wouldn't be excited about, I wouldn't want to be building my offense around Jake Lamb next year.
Why don't we move into my player since we'll stay on the third base side, and that's going to be talking about Miguel Sano. I didn't expect Sano to be anywhere near what he's done this year. I kind of expect him to be a 240 type hitter, not a 300 hitter. I knew that the power could be there, but I thought he was maybe a slightly better version of Kyle Schwarber. And I'm not a big Schwarber person, but Sano's impressed me with what he's done this year. Do you guys think that this is something that's repeatable for him? And if so, how high do you have him ranked exactly going into next season? We'll start with you, Evan.
Well, I definitely agree. Sano over, Jake Lamb, kind of in that area. So the thing with Sano, and me and Chuck had talked about this pre one of the shows when we were waiting on your ass, was that Sano has the league's highest or the lowest soft hit percentage. He's the best in soft hit percentage. So he's at 7% right now. And I want to say Miguel Cabrera was the best last year at 10.5%. I don't have those numbers in front of me right now. But so that's a thing. And the thing with Sano that kind of perplexes me is how to factor in the low contact rate. Because obviously when he puts the bat on the ball, you know, phenomenal things happen. The other thing I think we're going to be talking about is the batting average and how sustainable it is. So, Chuck, what do you think on either of those points?
Well, I think, you know, he has a 465 BABIP right now, and that's something that's pretty hard to support. I do think that as long as he can keep his batting average above 265, I've always believed in the power. The power has always been something that was projected upon him. And, you know, prospect mavens were all about his power going in to his major league career. And he's shown quite a bit of pop already. You know, he's on pace to get to the upper 30s in home runs. And I certainly believe in the power. I don't believe in the batting average to this extent, obviously. I think his BABIP has got to come way down. But he's a guy that when he squares up almost everything, you know, his exit velocities, he's a guy who hits home runs with mammoth exit velocities, etc. And I don't think the fact that the stadium's hard to hit home runs in really holds him back much, because he's just not the kind of guy that hits wall scrapers. So, and he's a better third baseman than I thought he was. I'm very high on him next year. I think that he is a guy that should not get out of the fourth round in any drafts next year, and I don't think he will with the kind of progression that he's made at the major league level to this point. People are going to see that he could bring them the moon and stars, and they're going to go for it. So I think he's a guy that he could get overdrafted if he gets drafted in mid-second round or late second round in some spots next year by people who are getting a little bit too happy about him. So that's where I'm on Sano. Love, love, love the talent here.
Evan, do you have any more thoughts on Sano?
No, I got distracted because I saw that he also has the highest hard hit percentage in the majors. So he's got, which, you know, he's got the lowest soft hit percentage. He's probably compensating for it else year, but Miggy was lowest in soft contact percentage last year, and he wasn't the leader in hard hit percentage. So he's better than Miguel Cabrera, right?
Yes. That's what that means.
Absolutely.
Transitive property.
Before we get into any more dumb comments from Evan, why don't we move over to you, Chuck, and you talk about your player?
Well, the player I'm going to talk about this week, because I know in the future, and maybe we'll have more evidence, I really want to talk about Aaron Judge in the future, but Dallas Keuchel is the guy that I was most wrong about. He's someone that I thought had two magical seasons, one ridiculously magical season, and then I thought he sort of turned back into a pumpkin. And he's making me look like an idiot. He was a 54th pitcher off the board this year in ADP, the 144th average pick. He's got 9 wins, which matches his 2016 total. He has a 1.67 ERA. He has the highest ground ball percentage of his career by 5%. The BABIP against him is 222, and his left on-base percentage is 88.7%. So the projection systems have him, giving up more like a 3.5 ERA the rest of the year instead of this 1.67 that he's got. But I really wanted to focus on the fact that now that he's regained his control I wanted to focus on the fact that we saw him have a down year after pitching a lot, and obviously the Astros look like a playoff team, if not a deep run kind of playoff team this year. So I'm wondering if you guys are going to be scared off by Keuchel's sort of swings in performance so far in his career. And I want to know if you consider him to be a strong candidate to be a top 15 kind of pitcher next year and going forward. What do you think, Evan?
Well, I think the hidden part of that, as far as am I going to be scared off? Like, I think people did hate on him a little too much in the offseason. I think that's definitely a thing. But what you're talking about, the momentum, is that the draft price is going to swell up, and I think it's going to go past the point where I would feel comfortable investing. If you're talking about, you know, early thoughts on next year's rankings, or I don't know if you're talking about a dynasty sense, but I think that's kind of where it's headed, is that I think the price is going to get a little too high, and I do worry a little bit about an extended playoff run for the Astros and what a workload like that could do for him.
Like, if you had to invest right now for next year in Keuchel or Arrieta, who would you invest in?
I'm not an Arrieta guy, so you're the wrong person to ask on that.
How about we go a little higher? How about Carrasco? Would you rather have Carrasco?
I have this soft spot for Carrasco, although you've kind of gotten in my ear about all the injury stuff. So congratulations, that worked for you. It's a lot closer than I thought it would be, but I'd still go Carrasco personally.
What about you, Ben? What are your thoughts on Keuchel? You think he's going to be a top 15 guy? Are you back on board? You think, are you going to try and monitor his health? I mean, that's the one thing about last year.
I wasn't a massive negative person on him coming into the year. I knew that last year he had a lot of bad luck because he wasn't getting a lot of called strikes, which he had 2 years ago. I didn't think he was as bad as last year. I didn't think he was as good as what he had 2 years ago. I thought he was somewhere in between. A top 15 pitcher sounds about right to me. I would say at best top 12, at worst top 18. So somewhere in that 6 or 7 player pitcher range, I think, is where you could put him. I still think that Carrasco is a better overall talent than him, but the biggest thing about Carrasco is the health. So when Carrasco is healthy, I know I'm going to get better starts from him. But I think over the year, if I needed someone who is more safe, I think I'd still go with Dallas Keuchel. But I think if I had an upside play and I had other people that I could rely on as anchors, I think I would go with Carrasco in that type of situation. I still think that Keuchel is a good player. I think that he plays in a good park. I think that the team that he plays for is really good. In terms of giving him offensive support, they give him great defense, and it fits exactly how he pitches. And as long as he's able to get called strikes, he'll perform very well. So I'm a big believer, and I'm not necessarily just back on the bandwagon because I wasn't off, but I'm more in the trying to propel him as much as I can. So.
Yeah, Keuchel makes me look like an idiot, which is okay. It's bound to happen. You make fearless predictions, it's going to happen, right?
Exactly. Chuck, did you have anything else to add on Dallas Keuchel?
Nope, I do think that he's going to be a dangerous pick next year, and he's one of those guys that when you start running out of aces and you feel like you're behind in pitching, that he's a guy that a lot of people are going to have to take, are going to begrudgingly take if they remember what happened, if they remember it last year, as well as I do, because he really, really burned me last year in a couple drafts, and maybe that's why I was so down on him this year.
All right, well, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on then?
All right, I am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached at Just Chucking It, and you can follow my column every week, which I appreciate. At least a bunch of the staff members and some friends of mine are following it, which I enjoy. It's called Of Note, and it's just like five or six blurbs, usually about a page and a half or two of various thoughts that are in my skull, and I can tell you right now that I'm going to be talking this week about how different CBS and ESPN are as far as what leagues they cater to and how it really makes some of their advice skewed at times. So that'll be one of the topics this week.
And what about you, Evan?
At FWFB, catch me on this podcast. Catch me on the football podcast whenever we get that up and running. Should be a grand old time. Ben, will you be joining us on the football podcast?
I will be on one of the football podcasts, but I have not been told which one yet. And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Currently, I'm on this podcast with you, Hooligans, and I just got to keep you guys in line as best I can. Make sure you guys don't go too off the rails, even though we're the off the rails podcast, as Chuck likes to pronounce us. I'm looking forward to the football season and some of the basketball offseason, especially as the draft season gets ready to get underway. But from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.